Good evening. Hi. It's good to be here together. In this cruddy paradise. Vimalakirti's statement, "I am sick because the whole world is sick," we've met often and it has a different resonance every time I hear it, as if it's a beloved friend saying hello. You know, that hello is different every time we meet. "I am sick because the whole world is sick" is different every time we meet. In Joan's book about, plugging in your computer, about Vimalakirti Sutra, she points out that this explanation he gives when he's asked, how could you be sick, you bodhisattva, is also an expression of love and a vow. And I'd like to hang out with this with you, this expression of love and a vow, with our refuge series and our precept study and before then. I've been thinking a lot about vows in this time. And I might have said, like how many times, that I experience vows themselves as arising naturally from our fundamental being. And from the very natural desire that all should be well, that all manner of things should be well. The particular expressions of the particular precepts feel to me like someone coming to meet that vow. The vow is already there. The precept comes to meet me at my vow and make a bridge with its, for instance, with its, how about this, and how about this. So I notice that Vimalakirti's expression, "I am sick because the whole world is sick," does land as both a statement of fact. This is how it is. This is how we are together. And a vow of allegiance to the fact as it sits. Sits in the heart. So the question kind of arises, how is this compassion? What does this have to do with compassion, which is, after all, what we yearn for? We yearn to receive it and we yearn to offer it. And so along with Vimalakirti's expression, I've also been hanging out with one that I've sent, some of you have been listening to, from Shunryu Suzuki Roshi. And I want to put those two together because I think they relate to each other. When we lose our balance, Suzuki Roshi says, we die, but at the same time, we grow. Whatever we see is changing, losing its balance. So isn't this something akin to the whole world is sick. Whatever we see is changing, losing its balance. The reason everything looks beautiful is because it is out of balance. The sickness in me greets the sickness in you. And sees you and finds you beautiful in your sickness. So the reason everything looks beautiful is because it is out of balance, but its balance is always in perfect harmony. The sickness in me resonates with the sickness in you. It's not a misfit. This is how everything exists in the realm of Buddha nature. Is there another realm? Losing its balance against a background of perfect balance. Against a background of all of our falling, all of our imbalances, all of our losing our feet, all together. So you see things, so if you see things without realizing the background of Buddha nature, everything seems to be in the form of suffering. But if you understand the background of existence, you realize that suffering itself is how we live and how we extend our life. Losing our balance is how we live, all of us, all together. And each time I lose my balance, maybe I'm just falling into the large, large, perfect balance that requires my falling out of balance. So why do I say cruddy paradise? Well, my house is a mess. My mind is a mess. My body is a mess. The world is a mess. And with just one step back, I can see that what I don't like is actually the not liking it. That's the suffering in it. My house just is as it is. My mind is as it is. My body is as it is. The world is as it is. So I looked up crud because I wasn't sure why cruddy paradise was what came to mind. And so crud had said something about ickiness. Basically it said, you know, sort of a icky and dirty. And I thought, huh, yeah, dirt, the dirt of it. And that, of course, called up that other image, powerful image from the beginning of the Vimalakirti Sutra, which really, I sometimes think, was the Buddha's whole teaching in that sutra. The image where when he's asked, how come you say that this is already the pure land? How can you say that when it's so full of difficulty? It's so full of suffering. There's so much that breaks our hearts moment by moment by moment. How on earth can this be? the Pure Land. And the Buddha sticks his toe in the dirt. In the dirt. And I don't take that just as, you know, the pure soil, you know. I think we could say the Buddha sticks his toe in the crud, right in the very makings of everything. And not separate, right in. And it only requires a toe's worth. And there's something so lovely about that. And suddenly, not only the questioner, but everybody can see this pure land. And so there's another, I discovered as I was looking up crud, there's another crud, and Frank probably knows this, crud is also something that stands for, that's used in the world of, oh yeah, Kelly knows it too. So create, read or retrieve, update and delete. And I thought, oh yeah, there we are. There we are. We create it, read it, update it, and sometimes delete. And there we are, right in the middle of sort of the, we make something and then we come back to it and we go, oh. So I kind of loved the resonance with that kind of crud too. But we need stories too. We need the humanness of this in our time and in our lives. So I think I'm actually going to tell you a story about another lifetime of mine when I was 20. And I dropped out of college, mostly because I was just miserable and it wasn't making any sense to me. So I wanted to preface this by saying, we ask, you know, what does this have to do with compassion? What does this have to do with vows, where I started out? What does this have to do with I am sick because the whole world is sick, with joining each other where we are? So this story to me is about that. So I was going to go out to San Francisco, and of course my parents were freaked out. This was 1969, and not their idea of the best use of my time. So they knew a couple, that the man was a neurologist that had done some work with my dad, and they were also in the dyslexia field, like both my parents. My mother was a speech pathologist. And so I have no idea how the conversation went or who initiated it, but they said, oh yes, she can come and live with us, which seemed like a good idea to my parents. To have me with somebody would be sort of safe. And they're the Witzels was their name. They just plain took me in. They didn't care how messed up I was. And I was pretty messed up and depressed at the time, at the beginning. And Mrs. Witzel lent me her mystery digests to read, and I would lie on the bed in their spare room eating carrots and ginger snaps and reading mystery stories. And And I would take walks. And eventually I found this wonderful job as a file clerk in a collection agency. Listening to the collection agency end of some pretty nasty conversations all day. But I would take walks out. They lived out near Land's End. So I would walk out to the cliffs over the Pacific. And there were all kinds of trails around there. And Mrs. Switzel had lent me, I don't know what, why, a pair of really beautiful Amalfi leather shoes. And on this particular day, I was wearing Mrs. Switzel's Amalfis. and I walked out there, and I was walking on the path, and this young man came along who had a kind of sort of messed up beauty to him, kind of intensity. And he had these brilliant green eyes, and he asked if he could walk along with me, and I said, sure. And so I thought he was kind of fascinating and slightly dangerous seeming. And his conversation was also very intense. And it was a beautiful day out there over the Pacific. And eventually he said, would you like to see my car? And the young idiot that I was, I said, sure. And so I got into his car with him, which was a hearse. And he proceeded to start to attack me. And I got out of there. On my way out of there, somehow he pulled a ring off of my finger. It was just one of those little agate rings. But I have no idea. I had no idea afterwards how he managed to pull this ring off of my finger. And he bit me in the side, right through my clothes. And it didn't break my skin, but it left pretty much distinct mouth-shaped bruise afterwards. And I got out and ran. And I didn't have Mrs. Switzel's shoes. But in the parking lot was a little VW bug with an African-American couple in it. And I ran to them and I said, would you help me? And I will never forget their utter disgust. It was so clear that they were looking at this ridiculous, spoiled white girl who's asking them for help because she was foolish enough to get into a hearse with this man. And but they didn't say no. They were clearly, that was not the evening they had in mind. And their disdain was just, a knife in my gut. But they drove me the few blocks up to the Witzel's house. And Mrs. Switzel never asked me, never ever asked me what happened to her shoes. I have no idea what she thought about it, but she never asked. And so as I thought back on that story, what I realized was how full of compassion it was from all directions, that she had lent me her really good shoes, knowing full well, you know, what a mess I was. And that I had seen something beautiful in that man and had been willing to companion him. And that somehow I'd managed to get out of there. And that couple, with their disdain, had been willing to help me and that Mrs. Witzel had never felt the need to ask what happened to those shoes. And so it was, so what I realized was that my memory of that day has always been a memory of kindness. The kindness of people who helped me even though they didn't want to. The kindness of Mrs. Witzel. The sadness of, I think that, you know, I was pretty naive, and I'm pretty sure that that man was on something. he wasn't a completely, he was sort of coherent at the beginning and then got weirder. And so what I've been realizing about Guanyin and Vimalakirti's I am sick because the whole world is sick was something about the way that compassion itself is made of that, impossible to separate, impossible to extricate one piece of that from the other. That all of it was shot through with the light of compassion, of utterly out of balance, falling together. Which then also brought me to our often told story about compassion with Layman Peng and his daughter Peng Ling Zhao crossing a bridge, selling baskets, falling on the other side, Peng Ling Zhao falling too in this cruddy world. I see you, I saw you falling, so I'm helping. That sense that right now, in the complexity of this moment, in this world, in this place, in my life and yours, that in our falling together, fortunately, no one is watching. There isn't any outside of this compassion. So that's it, what I have to say this evening.